since you're going to be playing with fire today, as soon as I'm done and before you do anything else, remember to go put on goggles and keep them over your eyes the whole time today. We are doing a technique today called calorimetry. And the metry ending of that means it's a measurement of some sort. Calor is a word that means heat. So calorimetry is measurement of heat, but really specifically what calorimetry refers to is the measurement of energy in some sample. The measurement of the amount of energy contained in a sample. The sample can be anything you want. Today's samples happen to be mostly food, but I mean you could measure the energy content of a human body if you had one at your disposal. Or of a mouse or whatever. The sample doesn't matter. There are different techniques for calorimetry, and I'll discuss the difference between the technique you're using and one that's a lot better in a minute, but you probably have already realized just from the words that calorimetry is involved with the word calorie, which also comes from that word meaning heat. Calorie is a scientific unit, and therefore it has a specific definition, just like a degree Fahrenheit does. The calorie is the amount of energy required to raise the temperature of exactly 1 gram of pure water by 1 centigrade degree, or 1 Kelvin if you prefer. They're the same size. All right. Now think about how much water is involved there. The calorie is based on water. Its definition is based on water. But water is also special in metric system for other units. For instance, if you have exactly 1 gram of water, how much volume is that? How much volume does 1 gram of pure water occupy? A kilogram of water does. 1 gram is 1/1000th of a liter, and therefore a milliliter, which is also exactly 1 centimeter by 1 centimeter by 1 centimeter. So a cube that's 1 centimeter on each side can contain exactly 1 gram of pure water. And a cubic centimeter is the same as a milliliter. And that's why you have to be careful today in measuring your volumes of water, because the amount of water matters to this process. But a single calorie is enough energy to raise that 1 gram of water's temperature by exactly 1 degree centigrade. Now I need to tell you something embarrassing about scientific history. We had this calorie unit already defined, and someone came up with this idea that I can't believe people agreed to. They said, well, when we're talking about calories in food specifically, let's invent a new unit, and let's call that the calorie. Did you hear the difference? Obviously not, because it's the same word with a capital C. That's the stupidity of the situation. Obviously, that's confusing, right? Calorie with a lowercase c does not equal calorie with a capital C. Calorie with a capital C equals 1,000 calories with a lower C. In other words, it's a kilocalorie. An uppercase calorie or a food calorie is a kilocalorie. That is truly stupid. Unnecessarily stupid. But the calorie that you grew up with, thinking of it in terms of food, is the capital C calorie. And so think about what that means. The daily input in terms of calories from food for an adult human roughly 2,000 uppercase calories, 2,000 food calories. Well, that's actually 2,000,000 calories, or 2 million calories. It's 2,000 kilocalories, which is 2 million calories, lowercase c. That's just in one day. That's enough energy. You can think of it two ways. That's enough energy to raise the temperature of 2 million grams of water, which is 2,000 liters. That is a big vat of water. Think about how hard that would be to heat up. You could, with your food, daily food, that you could heat that up 1 degree, or you could think of it as the amount of energy in one day to heat up 1 gram of water 2 million degrees. That's pretty big rise in temperature. So, as stupid as this was, eventually we came to our senses. Even though it's not completely out of use, if you look at a modern food label, you're unlikely nowadays to see uppercase C calories. Instead, now they're saying kilocalories, which is correct. But just keep in mind that a food calorie, an uppercase one, is actually 1,000 calories. Now, this definition of the scientific calorie, the lowercase one, we're taking advantage of that in the method of calorimetry we're using today. What we're going to do is burn samples one at a time and place that burning sample, hold it with tongs, directly under a test tube filled with a known volume of water. This is why you have to know exactly how much water there is, right? Because the more water you have, that same amount of heat won't raise the temperature as much. So I think you're using 10 milliliters, right? Pretty sure. Well, 10 milliliters is exactly 10 grams, since you're using water, pure water. And because of the definition of the calorie, as I just gave it to you, every 1 degree centigrade that you raise the temperature of that takes 10 calories, therefore. Right? Because the calorie is per gram. All you need to do, therefore, is burn. Get a good temperature to begin with. Burn. Heat it up. Get a final temperature, and you can make a calculation of how much energy was released by that food. Or it's not necessarily food. Most of them are foods. This is a very crude way of doing things, though. And this is why you should not be surprised if the numbers you get today are going to be way lower than what you would find on a food label per gram. It's easy to understand why. This is a crude technique because there's so many ways to lose the energy. Right? You're measuring the change in water temperature, which will occur only if the heat from the food goes into the water. But obviously, not all of that is going to happen, right? Not all of the energy is going to go into the water. Because for one thing, you're lighting your sample at the burner, which should not be right by your water, because you don't want the burner to artificially heat up the water. So you want the burner to be far enough away so it doesn't interfere with the water. You're burning your sample over here. It's going to start burning before it's even near the water, right? And so you're going to lose a lot of heat just to the air. It's not going to be captured by the water. But even also, you're going to see it burn, and seeing it is a release of energy. And you're going to hear it crackle. That's more energy. But even once you do get it directly underneath the tube, you're still losing a lot to the air around it. Not 100% of it, by far, or even close, is going into the water. So it is a crude technique. But you'll get results, and you'll be able to make computations of calorie content per gram. The food label values, which will be much higher than yours, are going to be much higher because they're more accurate, because they use a much more careful technique of calorimetry. And that's called bomb calorimetry. It's called bomb calorimetry because the sample, whatever it is put into a thick-walled stainless steel vessel called a bomb. You can screw it, unscrew it to open it up, put your sample in, screw it back, and it has ports in it, gas ports, valves, that you can then, once the sample's in there, pump in pure oxygen. Not only pure oxygen, but many atmospheres of pressure of oxygen. When you're burning something in the presence of oxygen, what that chemically that's known as a combustion reaction. Reaction with oxygen is combustion. When you burn things, that's combustion. And so, by pumping this full of oxygen, you're guaranteeing that it's going to completely burn because you have way more oxygen than you need. Oxygen is not going to limit it. Right? When you put a fire out, you're really depriving it of oxygen so it goes out. But that's not going to happen in a bomb because you pump it full of oxygen. And therefore, complete burn, nothing left but ash. Well, this is not only fitted with ports to do that as a prep, but it's also fitted with electrodes so that you can spark it. Once you have it pumped full of oxygen, then you give it a spark, and that's what causes the explosion. The bomb doesn't explode. It holds in the pressure, but the sample goes pretty much instantaneously to ash. It's not just a bomb out in the open air, though. The bomb itself is in a tank, and it's completely submerged in water. And this is pure water, and you know exactly the volume of this water, just like you have to know your volume today. And before you do the explosion, you make a very careful measurement of its temperature. The reason this is so much better, though, is that when the combustion occurs, there is nowhere that energy can go except into the water. So the change in temperature of the water, if you carefully measure that, will give you a much more accurate measurement of the energy that's released from the sample. That's how they make the food label. That's how they get those numbers. Don't be surprised that yours much is lower. Even though it is a crude technique, you should do it as carefully as possible, and it's, once again, best to work together. We're getting kind of sparse in here. Technically, you could do it alone, but it's better to work, better and quicker to work alone. Anyway, your samples are over here. Even though it's crude, though, you should do as good a job as possible. And really, there's only a couple ways that you can make mistakes. One is that you need, in order to be able to do this computation, you're going to need to have you're going to have two values of temperature, right? So you make a careful initial temperature measurement and then a final one. That's one thing you're measuring. But that change in temperature will allow you to compute calories, right? Based on the definition of the calorie. That'll tell you calories, total calories released, but really what you don't want total calories, you want calories per gram, right? And in order to do that, you need to divide your total calories by the amount of food that burned. Well, as you'll see, when you burn your samples, none of them is going to burn completely. And therefore, you don't use just the total mass of food that you weigh originally, because not all of that's going to burn. You need to use just the amount that has burned. Well, how do you figure that out? You need to have an ending mass and a beginning mass. Because when you subtract the ending mass from the beginning mass, the difference is the amount that actually burned and went into carbon dioxide into the air. The problem here is that when you burn these samples, bits of the sample are going to drip or fall off, still on fire. And you need to be able to collect all of those things, because those need to be part of the final weight that you measure. So, on your setup, you need to make sure that these are going to be sticky, too. They'll stick to whatever they drip on. So in order to have a way for you to be able to measure how much is left over, you need to have a piece of foil below your tube so that anything that drips will stick to that foil. No big deal, because you can take the foil to the what are these things called? Scale. There's still a way you can mess that up, though. You need to keep track of which pieces of foil you're using. Not all foil is identically masked, right? So you're used to, in most cases, it would be appropriate to put your foil or paper down and then zero it, right? Because you don't want the mass of the foil to be part of your measurement. That's not what you want to do here, though. You want to zero first, and don't forget to zero, because it's not always at zero necessarily, and then put your foil on, and then put your food on. It tells you to put about 1.5 grams of food on the foil, so whatever the mass of the foil is, put enough food on it to make it about 1.5 grams more than that. All right. But then whatever that combined mass of the food and the foil is, that's what you write down. Then you take that particular piece of foil, not a different piece, and put under your tube for that sample. That's going to get the drippings. Then you take that back, zero it first, put that foil and drippings on, and get a final mass of that. Then when you subtract that from the original one, the mass of the foil subtracts out, and so does the difference in the food. You see what I'm saying there? That's the proper way of doing that. You can use a fresh piece of foil every time, that's fine. But even if you did reuse it, you'd have to get a new mass each time. The other thing is careful measurement of temperature. So it's not set up yet, but when you set up your tube in this bottom clamp, you want to set it up so that the bulb is completely submerged in water. But, just as importantly, the bulb shouldn't be touching glass, either on the sides or especially on the bottom of the tube. And that can be a little tricky, because you have to mess with it so that it's lined up properly so it's not hitting the glass. This thing, though, can move. It can slant. It can move like this, and it also can twist if you play with it. So you should be able to get it into a place where it's not touching the glass. All right? That's another thing that you need to be careful with. Also, though, make sure you carefully measure the volume, because if the volume's not exactly 10, then your computations won't be right. And finally, the other thing you want to be careful about is allowing the temperature to rise too much. Some of these samples will burn out before the temperature goes up very much. Some of them will burn a lot better than others, and maybe burn too much. The manual tells you to keep an eye on the temperature and not let it rise above what temperature? 80. That's important. For something I mentioned this in a different lab for a totally different reason, but it applies here too. If I am heating up some volume of water and I have a computerized thermometer, so it's continuously taking the temperature, it'll make a trace, and the temperature will rise, right, over time, but only until it gets to the boiling point. And then I'm still putting heat into it, but the temperature isn't going to get hotter, higher. It's just going to boil it. Well, this plateau, you don't want to even approach. Because if you have this as your beginning and this as your ending, that's zero change in temperature. It says zero calories, even though you were putting a lot of heat into it, right? Therefore, the only meaningful beginning and ending temperatures need to be on that diagonal part, which is why if it gets to 80, when you're getting close to that plateau, blow it out. And whether you have to blow it out or whether it just goes out on its own, keep looking at the thermometer for a few seconds, because it can still rise after it's out, because the water is still conducting through it. When it stabilizes, though, when it reaches its maximum point, then write that temperature down for your final. All of that should be all you really need to know today. It's pretty straightforward. Just remember to put your goggles on. Now, to light these burners, most people think that you don't have to turn them on very much to light them. But actually, first of all, let me see whether the gas is on. Yes, it is. When you light the burners, which you do with a sparker, turn the gas on. Full on is all the way out, and then it'll go back off. But you need to turn this on not just a tiny bit. About 45 degrees, you'll start hearing it. Maybe even more. It says just like that. Just be very careful, because you can keep this burning the whole time. You don't have to extinguish it and relight it every sample. It could become a bitch to do. Keep it burning, not under the shelf. But just be very careful with it, seriously, because sometimes this flame is almost invisible. And if you lean over it, especially with long hair, it'll go up quickly. So be careful about that. All right, go ahead.